Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 5, Episode 11 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. It's been 2 weeks, I think, since we talked. We haven't had a show on in 2 weeks because we had a lot of things going on and had to get some more guests lined up. So we are now back, and we're still on Season 5, where we're talking about the NAVA Mr. Universe. And today we have a really special interview. This was really one of my favorite interviews. I got a chance to talk to Wayne Galash from Australia. And you guys who listen to this show know who Wayne is. Wayne is a historian of the sport of epic proportions. He's a videographer, and he started back in 1970 videotaping, actually filming shows and contests and filming bodybuilders posing. Way back then, he filmed Arnold and Sergio and Bill Pearl and Mike Mentzer and so many other guys, and he's still doing it today. I think Wayne is about 75 years old now, 76 years old. So he's still working hard from Australia. He was in town. He was in Florida because he went to the Arnold Classic out in Columbus, Ohio. And then after that, he visited some friends in Tennessee. And then he came to Florida where he was staying with some other friends. So I got a chance to meet with him, and we drove over to Peter McGuff's house, which I have not been over to Peter's house yet. So that was great. And I got a chance to interview both of these guys on the couch at the same time. And I don't think either one of them have done an interview together. They're both great historians and great people in the sport. Peter, of course, is one of the best writers ever in bodybuilding. And he was the head of Flex magazine for a long time. So it was really, really great to get to talk to both of these guys. And you guys are really going to love this interview where we talk not only about the NAVA universe, but just about the history of the sport, where the sport is going now. We talked a lot about how magazines are dying. They just announced Flex magazine is going to be discontinuing their service. Ironman's got to be on its last leg. I can't imagine Muscular Development going much longer. Muscle Mag International is gone. So it's just they're all leaving us. And we talked about that. We talked about how the internet has changed everything and how the magazines are going and how great those magazines used to be. I even had a chance to check out a few editions of Peter's Pumping Press, which is what he started out in England. And I think he only did like 8 issues or something, but man, they were amazing. They're almost like a newspaper format. There was so much detail and so many articles in there. It was just unbelievable. And this was in the early 90s. And it was so impressive that that is what prompted Joe Weider to invite Peter to California to start working for him. So that's why Pumping Press didn't really have a long history. But when you see stuff like that, man, you really miss those detailed magazines and the detailed contest reports. He had the 1991 Mr. Olympia report in there, and it was just unbelievable. So you're going to really enjoy this interview. It was a great opportunity to meet. I think Peter enjoyed it a lot. I know Wayne was really honored to have sat down and talked to Peter like that. So it was really a great interview for all of us. It was really a special day when we got to travel out to Fort Myers and talk to Peter. That's going to be coming up in a minute. But I do want to mention we are brought to you by our sponsor, Redcon One. And at Redcon One, everybody wants to be a champion and everybody wants to be the best. But at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a 6-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after your workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement. Protein comes from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs. And then the carbs come from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And enter the discount code LEGENDS so they know that you're listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and you'll get 15% discount off your order. And they also have the new MRE bar out, which is in a lot of different flavors. So check that out when you're on redcon1.com. See a lot of guys at the gym now wearing Redcon One t-shirts. So Redcon One is getting more and more popular. I believe they were the brand of the year. We're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements to the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They are the brand that I used to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe competition in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, the new 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion, and also the new 2018 Arnold Classic Physique champion. They also sponsor Sergio Oliva Jr., one of the top professionals in the sport today. They're also sponsoring 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute, as well as the Golden Eagle himself, Tom Platz. So all the stars are on board at Old School Labs. So go to oldschoollabs.com and then use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you'll get a 12% discount off your order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, as I mentioned, it has been a couple of weeks since we've done the podcast. I don't think we've done one. Let's see. Our last one was about 2 weeks ago. I had my birthday, and also before that, I was out in Colorado Springs, Colorado, for the AAAI-ISMA Fitness Organization. And if you want to learn more about that, go to their website, which is AAAI-ISMA Fitness. This is a certification program for aerobic classes. If you want to be an aerobics instructor or if you want to be a personal trainer, they have strength and conditioning courses and they have personal training certifications. So their next one is going to be in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and that'll be from June 1st through 3rd at the Atlantic City Convention Center. So that's supposed to be a huge one. They're supposed to expect 2,000 people. And I think I will be teaching the strength and conditioning course as well as teaching some courses on the secrets of natural bodybuilding. So if you are in that area or if you want to travel to New Jersey to check that out, check out their website at AAAI-ISMA Fitness. So I was out there, I think the first weekend in March, the weekend of the Arnold Classic, and I was doing my course out there. So it was a beautiful, beautiful hotel called the Broadmoor Hotel. It's a 5-star hotel. Actually, Arnold was just there a couple of weeks before I was. And they have this big wall in the lobby where they have all the pictures of the people that have stayed there. The hotel is 100 years old. And when you look out the window of your hotel, the mountains are in the background. They have this huge lake with ducks and there's deer walking around. It's just amazing. Beautiful hotel. One of the best hotels I've ever stayed at. So that was really a great experience. And I'm really glad I got to go out there and participate with that group. And they're a great bunch of people. So I'm looking forward to doing it again. I guess I'm going to be signed up for all their seminars this year. So we got like 3 more left. And then the week after that, I was out on a cruise. I took a Carnival cruise for my birthday because my birthday was on Saturday. Turned 55 years old this year, if you can believe it. And didn't really like the cruise, I'll be honest with you. Carnival cruise. I went on a Royal Caribbean cruise a long time ago, probably, I think it was in the 90s sometime with my girlfriend at the time. And that was really a great cruise. They had great food and went to a lot of different places, but I guess the shorter cruises aren't as good. And this one was really disappointing. Did not like it at all. So that was not a great birthday, unfortunately. But I do have some other good news. Old School Labs, who is my sponsor, they are going to be sending me out to Venice Beach, California for Memorial Day weekend, which is only in a couple more months, every holiday over the summer. So that's Memorial Day, 4th of July, and then Labor Day. They have a Muscle Beach contest. So it's actually on the beach. It's not in an auditorium or a high school or anything. And it's on the beach, just natural sunlight for the lighting. And in addition to the contest itself, which is the Venice Beach contest, they have a Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. So on all three of those holidays, they induct someone different into the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. And it's usually a golden era type of bodybuilder. I think Mike Christian got inducted last year. I think Joe Weider got inducted many years ago when he was still with us. So it's really, really a great ceremony. Joe Wheatley is the guy that puts it on. So I'm going to be attending that. And Phil Williams, who was the 1985 MPC Nationals winner, a guy I really looked up to when I was competing, Phil is going to be inducted into the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. And I know he's very excited about that. So I'm excited to go out there and see that. And I'm going to try and get some really good interviews while I'm out there. With the Old School Labs cameras, because they're going to have the camera crew following me around. So I'll be out there for the whole weekend. So I'm really looking forward to going out to California. I haven't been out there in many years. I can't remember the last time I was out there. I used to go out there a lot when I was working for Iron Man magazine. Of course, I made the cover in 2011, so I was out there that year. I'm not sure if I've been out there since then, though. I don't think I have. So that's already 7 years. So But California's great. I love California. So it'd be great to go out there and visit there. And my new book that I talked about before, which is going to be called Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, is really now almost done. I know I said it was going to be out in March, but it really now is almost done. I've added the photos to the book. The photos look great because I got all these pictures of when I competed in natural bodybuilding contests from the 1990s. The first contest, which was the MPC Natural Illinois contest in Chicago, 1991, that was my first natural contest, all the way up to 1998 when I won the Natural Olympia in Greece. So it's really cool because I wrote everything down, and including my measurements, my weight, my workouts, my diet. So you get to see the exact program I used for every contest I entered from 1991 to 1998. So some of the shows were not successful. Some of them I missed my peak, and I wrote down what I learned from that year. And then other shows were successful, so I wrote down what I learned from those years. So it was really a great journey, and looking back over it and writing it, it was really fun to write, because my physique really improved a lot from 1991 to 1998. And I really gained a lot of size. I refined my physique a lot more. And that's why I was able to win the Natural Universe contest in 92 and 96. And then I won the Natural Olympia in 98. So that's the first part of the book, which I think is a great part of the book in itself. I mean, I could probably just sell it like that. But then the second part of the book is all about how you can get ready for a natural bodybuilding contest. So what type of training do you have to do? Do you include the basic exercises? Do you go heavy? How much cardio do you do? How you add the isolation exercises to your workout without overtraining? How you can put all of that together, including all the way up until the show. And I give tips on, you know, the tanning, the posing, what you're going to be expecting when you go to a contest, what the prejudging is going to be like, what the evening show is going to be like, what the pose down is like. So that is the second half of the book. So this is really a book full of information. And I will have it available on Amazon.com probably another week or two. So I will let you guys know exactly when it's available. Also, my other books are still on Amazon. If you guys haven't gotten those yet, the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1, that is on Amazon right now. And that has been selling really well. And also the MP6 workout, which is the workout I've been using for the last couple of years. And I'm still using it now. I'm training really hard because I'm getting in shape for the Muscle Beach show. I want to be in shape when I go out there. But after that, around June and probably July, I will be doing photo shoots because I want to see how good I can look at 55 years old. I do this to motivate myself every couple of years. I just do some photo shoots, and whether I'm competing or just photo shoots, I give myself an excuse to get in shape. I will be doing that this summer, and I'm really looking forward to that because I got pretty heavy. I got the 230, bulky and big. My arms were like 19, my legs were 27, so I was really in pretty big condition for biggest I've been in actually a couple of years. So now I'm whittling it down. I'm losing the fat real slowly. I'm down to about 220 right now, so I'll probably get down to about 205, maybe a little under 205, between 200 and 205, and I want to be really ripped at 55 years old to show these young guys what the old guys can look like, right? So I'm doing that now, so I'm using the MP6 workout, which combines power workouts that last 6 weeks long. And then after that, I go to a mass building workout. So I build the strength up first using the power cycle. And then that added strength that I have, I use that to train with heavier weights in the 6 to 10 rep range, which is the best range for building muscle. And that's in the mass cycle. So if you haven't checked that out, check it out. It's a great book. It's got a lot of information. And that is on Amazon.com as well. And then if you're interested in getting in shape and you want a training or diet program, my new website is up. It's called dadbodtoripbod.com. And if you go on that, you can just fill out a questionnaire right there. You just click on it and fill out the questionnaire, and I will have all the information I need to set up a personalized training and nutrition program for you. We've got a lot of people out here in Tampa who are getting some great results. So I created the website so I could reach more people and help them out. So check that out if you are interested in getting in shape, if you're having problems reaching your peak or losing weight, or if you've gotten yourself out of shape and you don't know how to get back in shape, go to dadbodtoripbod.com. All right, and I also want to mention we're brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. And they offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call. So their office number is 813-922-8939, or you can just go visit their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. That's FL for Florida, flalternativemeds.com. Or again, their office number is 813-922-8939. Talk to Jeff or talk to Bradley. They are there at the office, and tell them I sent you. You will get 20% off any packages you order, and you'll get a free consultation if you tell them that you found them out from the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have been working with these guys since last July, and I got to tell you guys, I feel fantastic. I feel like 15 years younger. So these guys really know what they're doing. It's very safe. It's very controlled, and you will really, really benefit from it. All right, that is it for our intro. Here is our interview with Peter McGough and Wayne Galash. I interviewed both of these guys, and you guys are really going to love this interview. Here you go.
All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I'm here with two of my good friends who are very big historians in the sport. We have Wayne Galash from Australia, and Wayne has filmed videos and movies of many of the classic competitions going back to 1970 and videotapes of great bodybuilders guest posing and doing posing exhibitions. And then we have my other friend, Peter McGough. And Peter, of course, has written for Joe Weider's magazine and Muscle Mag International. And he's a big historian of the sport as well. And one of two great historians here talking about the bodybuilding shows. So, guys, we were talking, Wayne, about the NABBA universe, and we did a whole series about this on our podcast. So you guys were both at the 1970 Mr. Universe and NABBA, the NABBA universe, which was Arnold's last NABBA universe. And you didn't know each other at the time, though, right?
No, we didn't. We were, as I said, we were moving in a parallel manner, but we didn't know each other then, and we got to know each other at a later date. Probably about the time when Peter went into publishing.
Yeah, I was there as a pure fan, but I mean, it's I think I knew who Wayne was at that time. He wouldn't have known me, but it's funny. Neither of us can remember when we first met.
Not exactly.
We just know it's 20 or 30 years ago, and really, in all that time, we've never sat down like this and had a chat. We've all been scurrying about, working and doing stuff.
We always said hello and said a few words, but we've never really had stopped to have a proper chat.
Yeah. So this is, and you only get to be called a historian when you get to a certain age. That's why nobody calls a 25-year-old a historian. You've got to have grey hair and all the rest of it before you get there.
That's true.
So let's talk about that 1970 NABBA universe. I think this is it's always one of my favorite contests looking back over the years. I think that was Arnold's he was in unbelievable shape at that contest, and that was his last appearance in the NABBA universe. So, Peter, how many NABBA universes had you seen up until that point? Was that your first one?
That was the very first one I went to, because I'd only got into working out in the year before, August 1969. I was 20 then.
But you knew of these guys like Dave Draper and Arnold and Reg Park.
I was always looking at. I wasn't buying the magazines in those days, but I was always looking at them in the newsagents, so I knew who these guys were. And then our gym, Stewart's gym in Nottingham, we used to go down to the Universe every year on a bus. And it was a celebration of what we did.
We were just talking off camera about how, there was no internet, obviously, then. And so when you got to see these shows, it was the first time you ever saw these guys in person and moving. Like you said, the statues came to life. I thought that was perfect how you said that. And it's really amazing. And, you guys took a bus, and it was like a party going there.
Yeah, I mean, there was one occasion where it's a long story, but I don't know whether to tell it. No, I'll tell it another time. Yeah, we'd come back, and it was like, remember when you were a kid, and you went to the Saturday morning pitches, and you'd come out, you'd be Roy Rogers. So when you come back from the Universe, I'm Frank Zane. Oh, I'm that sort of. I'm Elias Petsas, and people start posing and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. It was like, it set us up for the following year. It was a great day out, such fun.
Yeah.
And Wayne, now, how long had you been into following bodybuilding at that point?
I had been a bodybuilding fan since 1962, and I started training when I was 20. And so I competed up until 1968, and then I was also doing camera work, which I started in 1966. So 4 years before I did my first international contest, which was the 70 Universe, I'd been filming the top bodybuilders in Australia, and the best one I had seen there was Frank Colombira.
Yeah.
And he was unbeatable in the period that he was at his peak. And after Frank Colombira, which was early 1970, I worked with him, I thought, I've got to get over for Arnold's last Universe, because it was a well-known fact that it was probably his last. And then I took my camera overseas to the Universe, and then I've just kept going every year since with overseas capturing of bodybuilding history.
Now, why did you think it was going to be Arnold's last year?
Well, I think I'd read it in the magazines that it was probably his last, and I knew that there would be pressure between WIDA and NABBA, and that he would probably go in the IFBB direction with Joe. So it was a general consensus that it would probably be his last for various reasons, and I think the magazines might have said it or hinted at it, and I was aware that that was my last chance probably to see him, and that turned out to be the way it was.
Okay.
Peter, did you go to the pre-judging also, or just the night show?
It was an afternoon show, wasn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was Queen Victoria Theatre.
I think I said to John, I think it started at about 2 o'clock and finished about 4:30.
That's it. And then we used to go. It wasn't a banquet, but it was a get together with the guys, and you'd get the likes of Frank Zane whipping his top off and doing poses.
Yeah.
It was that year, 1971. It was. I got two friends, John Courtney, who got me into bodybuilding and who died recently, lifelong best friend I ever had, and another friend we had, Les Wright. He was competed in the Junior Mr. Britain in the 50s. These were both great talkers, wits. Les attached himself to Oscar Heidenstam as we approached the banquet, and we walked in with Oscar. We didn't have to pay because everybody thought we were with Oscar. I can tell you another story about Les Wright maybe a bit later on, but to go to 1970, you know, Dave Draper was in it, Reg Park. This was the big meeting. You know, Reg had been like Arnold's mentor, and this was the mentor taking on the pupil. And, you know, somebody said something to Arnold about, so how's the contest going? And he said, what contest? Which was typical Arnold, even arrogant towards this legend, you know. Yeah. Of course he won. But the interesting thing there is, the Mr. World was being held the next day in Columbus.
Yes,
right.
And that's when he first met Jim Lorimer. Jim Lorimer arranged to fly Arnold and a couple of the other guys from the NABBA Universe in London on the Saturday to Sunday in Columbus. And, of course, that's the first time Arnold beat Sergio. So it was a momentous weekend. It was almost, if you look about it, that was his goodbye to NABBA, and this was, I've arrived in the IFBB, I just beat Sergio, and in a few weeks' time I'm going to be Mr. Olympia.
Right.
You know, so it was a real fulcrum moment.
Yeah.
And what people forget is the fact that because it was an afternoon contest in England, he was able to rush to Heathrow Airport, fly to New York, and then I understand Jim Lorimer had a private jet to rush him to Columbus.
That is correct. They couldn't get a scheduled flight from New York to Columbus, but the private jet, which shows how big thinking Jim Lorimer was all the time.
Yeah. Yes, that story came out last weekend at the Arnold Classic when they had the Sunday seminar.
Yeah.
And I interviewed Boyer Coe, and I remember he said that they didn't have to go through customs or nothing. They just went on this private jet. Yeah. So Lorimer must have had some, because he used to work for the FBI, so he must have had some connections. Right. So tell me, let's talk about the amateur division of that year, because you had Franco Colombo was beaten by Chris Dickerson in the short class, and then Boyer Coe beat out Jim Haislop in the medium class, and I think Frank Richards won the tall class, correct?
Well, actually, Jim Haislop wasn't there in 1970.
Oh, that's right. I'm 69.
And I miss seeing Jim Haislop. I never saw him. But Frank Zane won his class in the amateur.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got
yeah,
that.
That's right. And, and of course, and then he went on and he won the overall amateur, and his wife won the bikini contest.
Yeah.
And there's a terrific photograph I have, which I got from George Greenwood, of Arnold and Frank holding Christine Zane between them.
Yeah.
You know the photo?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a famous photo. So what did you think of Frank Zane?
Well, I thought he was a good winner that year. I had no arguments with that whatsoever. But I'd like to ask you two, what did you think of the result between Reg Park and Dave Draper? Do you think that Dave Draper was unlucky to get third?
Well, Dave Draper, I mean, I'm English, so Reg Park was an inspirational legend to us all. But I, early 60s, I really got involved with bodybuilding a lot earlier than the first time I went to the gym. I remember looking at, I was in the Scouts. Went to this Scout Hall, in this little anteroom, they had a few weights, they had some magazines. And, you know, the guys that were in the magazine then for Joe were Hugo Larbra, Freddie Ortiz.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, Freddie Ortiz, if he came out today and you showed a photograph, people would say, that's Photoshop. Nobody can look, nobody has arms or lats like that.
But they were real.
They were real, yeah. So, and I was a bit of an artist, a drawing artist, and I used to draw Superman, but I used to make him more muscular than the actual Superman. Yeah. So I was aware of the Weeder magazines because the soup, you know, the adverts were in the back of the Superman comic. I'm rambling here, but I had this sort of slow burn. I knew who the bodybuilders were even before I made the commitment to start training, you know, because my friend John, he was always trying to get me into training. I said, no, my game's soccer and track. I'll get muscle bound, you know, stupid theory. But of course, once I did start to train, I was always I had the most stamina on a soccer field and could run for it. Anyway, so what was the point I was trying to make, John? You know,
well, Dave Draper.
Dave Draper. Yeah, I would have. Dave was more, what's the word? Cut, you know, conditioned.
He had better condition for sure.
Yeah.
Condition.
But, you know, like I say, you know, it wasn't, we never used to argue and scream about results. You know, it was more, you know, you were there to see the guys. But I would have maybe given it to Dave second place.
I think I would have too. Yeah. I thought he had just a little bit more condition on the day, and I felt that in a close decision, Reg being such an idol of the English, that helped pull him through into second place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the way it works out, but Arnold was on his own, wasn't
he? He was a class above. We're fortunate. We saw Arnold compete at his peak. And there's not many people around that are talking in microphones today that actually saw him at his peak. Well, he had it. He had the height. He had fantastic condition. He had very good overall symmetry for a tall man. Wonderful biceps and a fantastic twisting back shot, which many people have tried to copy. But you never see his twisting back pose on bodybuilders today. And that's the difference. They can't do it.
Right.
No. I mean, he didn't have the narrowest of waists, but he could make that in those three-quarter shots. He looked like he had a 22-inch waist.
Yeah.
The thing about Arnold is he always played to his best shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if he was asked to do a double bicep or he'd throw it a side chest before it, just, no, that's how good I am.
Yeah.
It was always the showman.
And he was smart.
Yeah. He had a strategy on stage. It was, you know, it always looked easy to him, big beaming smile, the other guy's sweating and, you know, traumatized, and he's just having fun. But that was his strategy.
Yeah. That's what I always heard about Arnold. He was always aware of not only how he looked, but he always was aware of what was going on around him, where everyone else was more concerned with what was going on with them during a contest, you know, because.
And Arnold also knew how to psych out his opponents. He had them thinking they were beaten right from the start, and he was always acting like the winner, which he knew he was going to be.
Right.
And that's, he did that for many, many years, and that's in part how he won the 1980 Olympia, because he somewhat psyched the others out, And he had a pretty good overall package, and we've talked about this many times. Chris Dickerson, who plays second, if you were a judge then, when it came down to the last two, Arnold or Chris Dickerson, I think you can understand, whatever the politics were involved, you can understand they said, well, we prefer Arnold to Chris Dickerson as Mr. Olympia. So I think that was part of the psychology and what actually happened in 1980.
Yeah.
Yeah, funny thing, going back to, say, 1980, you know, this is how it was in those days. I was waiting for Muscle and Fitness to come out. That had just been established, changed from Muscle Build. There was no Flex in those days. I went to the newsstand. This was like 6 or 7 weeks after the Olympic. Yeah. And on the cover was all these pictures of Arnold. And I thought, what the hell's Arnold doing on the cover of the Olympic?
Because he was retired, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. And it never drifted round, you know, like now, you know, somebody breaks wind and the whole world knows about it within 10 seconds, especially if it's powerful. But in those days, you had such a trust me to bring the conversation down. And then when you look, I was always of the impression from what I saw, despite all the controversy, I would have given it to Arnold, because even though he wasn't Arnold, the others all had faults.
They did.
And like you say, standing next to Dickerson. And that was the other thing. Arnold didn't follow the script. He didn't side tricep. He would never hit a side. He was no good in that. He'd do something else. He never gave an opening to anybody.
But he got away with it. That was the thing.
Yeah, because he had the charisma and the standing. He had Franco coming on with a towel and all the rest of it. It was, you know, Batman and Robin all over again. So, you know, he says he was told he was behind by Bill Pearl after the prejudging, and then he posed and posed and posed, sweated all the water out, and then came out through in the evening.
And he dominated in the end.
Yeah, he is the ultimate bodybuilding competitor. And the other thing about it is, despite all the controversy and people saying it, most controversies never should have won, it never bothered him. It never bothered. He just wanted to be number one. That was what was important. Yeah, yeah. Whether you thought it doesn't matter, I'm number one, record books. Look, it's there.
Right.
That
right.
was the end of it.
Right.
You know, he never went into a long debate about it, did he?
Yeah, Arnold, I always call him the Muhammad Ali of bodybuilding, because it wasn't just his physique, which I think stands right up there. You know, I mean, obviously things change with generations, but it was the way he conducted himself at contest. And we're talking about this 1980 Olympia. This is 2018, so look how many years this is, and we still talk about it. And that meeting he had when he almost got in that fight with Mike Mentzer, I mean, he did that to psych out these guys, but we're still talking about that, because it was just, he was so colorful, and he had such a personality, and he did things that no one else did, and I think that's what makes him, you know, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever.
Absolutely. I mean, he had the mentality to pull forward with it. But, you know, I think that business with Mensa, this was all to do with having two weight classes. Everybody else wanted two weight classes. He wanted one weight class. I think if everybody else had wanted one weight class, he'd have got... It was just get them thinking about something else and getting them... Here's Arnold again trying to rule the roost and all the rest of it.
Right.
You know, like he said about Frank Zane, he told him, Frank said, you never told me you were going to do the contest to come and ask you. He says, it's not about friendship, it's about strategy, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
He was the master. He was the master when it came to strategy and psyching people out and getting dominance over them before they even stood on stage.
Yeah.
And that's what he was an expert at. Mm-hmm. And like Muhammad Ali, he just had that ability to be able to dominate an event.
It's funny bringing up Muhammad Ali. I mean, the night before the Olympia, the 1980 Olympia, Muhammad Ali fought Trevor Burbeck, his last fight, and got absolutely pounded.
Yeah.
Arnold was watching that, and you must have thought at some point, seen some correlate. Like you're saying, it was an obvious counterpart.
Muhammad Ali about him.
Have I bitten too much off? But
he didn't.
He didn't, He managed it.
So what was it, when you guys left that contest that night in 1970, did you realize that you had seen these unbelievable bodybuilders and that, you know, it was just such a great lineup of great champions that would live on for years?
Well, when I left that contest, I was somewhat in a daze because I wasn't quite sure if Arnold was going to be able to do it. As the contest progressed, I was pretty sure that he was going to do it. And my other thought was this: Chris Dickerson was pretty close, but he didn't have the upper body of Arnold. He was nowhere near. He had great legs. And my thoughts were, well, probably Chris Dickerson will come out and win it next year. And I was thinking ahead 12 months because I knew that Arnold had finished and he was going into his movie career. So I was more thinking along the lines of Chris Dickerson, and also wondering if Frank Zane would ever win another Olympia, because I think he was third from memory. Boyer was fourth. And my other thought was this. I thought that Mike Mensah was a little bit hard done by getting fifth.
I'm sorry, I should have specified. I meant like 1970. What did you think about 1970 when you walked away from that?
Well, in 1970, I just knew I'd seen the best bodybuilder in the world. That was very clear-cut and obvious, and Arnold was on his own level there, and there was no doubt about that. And everybody expected him to win, and he did win. And Reg was also a little bit past his peak in 1970, so it was a pretty comfortable victory. And then in 71, Arnold won the Olympia in Paris, and he was up against one other unknown competitor, which hardly gets a mention in the record books. And I wrote an article about that event, and I checked the article the other day, and I named this competitor, but he wasn't even officially qualified to be in the Olympia. So I suspect that Serge Nubre just wanted to have somebody else in the contest, because Sergio had been banned and was turned into the guest poser, and Franco also guest posed because he had been disqualified, I think, for something he'd done in California or taken money for an appearance. So did you know about that, Peter?
Yeah, they were both in Paris ready to do the Olympia when they were told, you know, you're going to be barred, which I don't think Serge would have liked that because there was no contest then. So whether they shuttled this other guy on or not, I don't know. But, you know,
they did.
It's a bit sad to think that Franco and Sergio were standing there ready to pose, and politics got in the way. Now, you know, I did ask Arnold once about that 71 contest, you know, that he first of all, it looked like he might enter it back end, then this new ruling came out. And I asked him how he felt about it. He said, I was really annoyed, he says, because, and he said it in quite a aggressive way. He said, I really wanted to beat Bill Pearl. Mm-hmm. I wanted the opportunity to beat him.
No. Well, you're talking about the 71 never.
Yeah. And I didn't get the opportunity, so that's the way he felt about it.
Yeah.
And if I could ask Arnold a similar question, I would say, how did you feel at not being able to beat Sergio in 1971 in Paris?
Yeah, he would have wanted to do that, and of course we then came to 72. To Olympia in Essen, where there was all this controversy. But like I say, that never bothered Arnold, you know. I won, and that's the end of it. The thing with Arnold is, now I got a few stories for later on, but we'll
okay. Well, let's talk about 71, because Bill Pearl won over Sergio Oliva, and Reg Park was in it also, and then Frank Zane was also in the pros, and he won the short class, and then but Bill Pearl won the overall, and Arnold did not compete in that. So you guys were both at that show also. So tell me your impressions of that.
Well, I was a great fan of Sergio. And I've said before, you know, I was just shot back in my suit when Sergio first came out. So I thought he beat Bill Pearl, but I looked at photos since, and, you know, when you're 20 years old, and like I say, it wasn't life or death who won a contest. It was like you rooted for your team, your favourite, you know, and it was just a great day out. But I don't remember sitting there, you know, looking quizzically at, well, who's got the best upper pecs, who's got this, who's got... You just, wow, that's Frank Zane, wow, that's Ken Waller, wow, that's this guy, you know. You were just seeing him. It was... It was Beatlemania in a bodybuilding.
Yeah, right.
I sat just behind the judges at the 71 NABBA Universe and filming the event. And my thoughts were, I was a Sergio fan and a Bill Pearl fan, so I didn't really mind who won. I just thought it was fantastic to see both of them. And then as I looked at it more carefully, and I looked at the photographs after the event as well, I felt that Sergio was carrying a little bit of fluid and that he may have arrived in England too close to the event, because 1 week later in Paris, Sergio had got rid of the fluid and looked a heck of a lot better.
So what was it like seeing Bill Pearl? Had you guys seen Bill Pearl before? Because Bill Pearl and Reg Park, for a lot of the newcomers who are listening to this podcast, they may not realize those guys were the legends of their day. You know, like when Reg Park came along, he was bigger than anyone before him. And then when Bill Pearl came along, I've heard people talk about Bill Pearl, like when they see him pose, he just had a majesty about him on stage, and you couldn't really describe it just from seeing pictures of him. So both of those guys were really legends in their own time. But neither one of you had ever seen before Bill Pearl or Reg before, right?
I'd seen Reg in 1969. He was touring Britain in the Reg Park show, but he wasn't in contest shape that time, you know.
He was a little bit older at that time.
Right? Yeah, you know, Reg and Bill, if you think, you know, the 50s, early 60s, they were the two standouts, really. I know Larry Scott came into it later, but the interesting thing is, they only competed once every 5-6 years, didn't they? They never, I mean, Reg did the 70 and 71. You know, that's the first time I've ever done
two in a row.
Right. It was usually 7 years before they did it.
That was crazy.
And Bill Pearl didn't compete every year, did he?
No, they were both the same. They were both as long.
Yeah. 5 or 6 years
apart. Yeah, Bill Pearl would pick a year and peak for it. Mm. I only saw Bill Pearl pose twice. That was the 71. And he did a tour in Australia, and I was involved with putting him on in Adelaide in, I believe it was 83, where he posed and did a seminar. And I think he said at the time that was the last time he was going to do a public posing exhibition. And that was 83, 1983.
Yeah.
So I had the pleasure of seeing Bill Pearl pose twice, and he had an extraordinary, powerful presence when he was on stage.
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard. It wasn't just his physique, it was the way he presented himself on stage, his presence,
One anecdote from 71, back to my two friends, John and Les, two real characters they were. We went outside after the prejudging, and there's Sergio getting into a London cab, and the door's open, he's sitting in the back, he's obviously waiting for somebody. So Les, who's, you know, he'd make Howard Stern seemed like a wallflower, you know, he wasn't frightened of anything or anybody. He said, "So what do you think, Sergio? What do you think?" And Sergio says, "Politics, politics," or something like that, you know. He says, "What? You don't think you won?" I always remember this. Sergio says, "I got beaten by a fat pig."
Go, you know,
which wasn't very gracious.
Right.
and Les was going to take him to task then. Sergio's guys came and they got in the cab and drove off, but he didn't take that defeat very well. And you know, we do give plaudits to bodybuilders, but we also have to say, and maybe I shouldn't because the guy can't defend himself, but Sergio did himself no favors in the way he interacted with people. I mean, he could have. Arnold took every opportunity that was ever given to him, knowing that, okay, you got the best of the deal, but give me a year of doing this and I'll turn it around.
Yeah.
Sergio was always suspicious of anybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't, you know, and I had later, in, you know, a couple of occasions where it was just very, very difficult to, you know, work with him.
Yeah.
I worked with Sergio twice, and I loved his physique and working with him, but he was difficult. And each time when I worked with him, and he was getting a good fee for the posing and filming, and each time halfway through the period that we had allocated, he had asked, "Can we finish now? I'm getting tired, I'm getting cold." And thinking back, if he had given more, I could have recorded more and there'd be more available on him for posterity. Yeah. But he wasn't thinking the way Arnold would have thought. Arnold would think, "Let's get as much out there as I can."
Yeah.
And Sergio was a little bit, as you said, a little bit reticent to give too much.
Yeah.
And there's that famous story, I'm sure you guys both know about this, Bill Pearl wrote about in his book, where he was backstage and this father was there with his little son. his young son, and the son went up to Sergio and said, can I have your autograph? And Sergio said, get away from me, get away from me, I'm getting ready for the contest. So the kid walked away all despondent, and then he walked up to Bill Pearl, and Bill Pearl goes, yeah, and he picked him up, he put him on his shoulder, he took a picture with him and everything, and then he gave him, you know, he put the kid down on the floor, and the kid went back to his dad, and then when Bill Pearl said when they were up on stage for the prejudging, he looked down, and his father was the judge. Yeah. And he was winking at him saying, yep.
That's a good story.
Yeah. So, Wayne, now you were at both shows. You were at the 1971 NABBA Universe, where Bill Pearl beat Sergio, and then you were at the 1971 Mr. Olympia, and Sergio was guest posing, or he was allowed to guest pose, and then Arnold won the show. So now you got to see Arnold and Bill Pearl. You know what I'm going to ask you. You saw Arnold and Bill Pearl a week apart, so if Arnold would have been allowed to go in that NABBA Universe, who do you think would have won?
Well, based on Arnold in 1970, and based on what I saw in Paris, I've got a feeling that Arnold probably would have won the 71 NABBA universe. It's something we'll never know, so it's only my conjecture, but I think, and Arnold was younger, and Bill Pearl was getting towards the end of his career, still great, but I would suspect that Arnold might have had a narrow victory if he had been there in that NABBA universe. And the same way people have asked me, would Sergio have beaten Arnold in Paris if he'd been in the contest?
Yeah.
I'd give the same answer. It would have been a toss-up. But I think the judges probably would have gone with Arnold with a very narrow margin.
What about you, Peter? What do you think?
Well, of course, I didn't see Arnold at the 71 Olympia. Yeah. And it's difficult, but casting my mind back, I mean, even at the time, I remember thinking at the 71 universe, the Arnold I saw in 1970, I think, would have beaten Bill Pearl. Mm-hmm. Oh. And he probably only got better, you know, in a year.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, Bill was 42 then or something, yeah.
Yeah.
And Arnold was
24.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. And it's funny, in those days, we weren't surprised by a guy ruling the world at 23. Now it's, we have to wait till the, you know, taking the pension before anything.
And also in those days, 41 was old.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Bill Pearl, you know, being 41. And he didn't he come out in an article in Iron Man magazine the year before, and he said, my last contest is going to be the 1971 NABBA Mr. Universe, so anyone who wants to beat me, go up to that show.
Yeah, he said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was right out there.
Do you think there's any truth to the rumors that, or the story, that Leo Stern told Joe Weider, my boy's going to beat your boy in London at the Universe, and that's why Joe wouldn't allow Arnold to compete that year in the Olympia, or in the NABBA Universe?
Well, Leo Stern may well have said that, but that was really a form of psyching out, which is the sort of thing that Arnold would do, but I doubt that that had any great influence on anything. My feeling is that by 1971, Joe wanted to keep Arnold for himself and for the IFBB. That was my feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that story as well about Leo, but like that's what a good coach would do, you know, you know, in the Rocky and the Mickey, yeah.
You don't believe that influenced anything to do with Arnold not going?
No,
not allowing him to go.
It's hard.
I have no inside knowledge of that time, but knowing Joe, he'd almost want to do it the other way around. Okay, go out and beat him.
Yeah.
But my thought, and from what I've gathered, it was Ben that was pushing for this.
Yeah.
Demarcation line,
yeah.
You know, the contest, the IFBB only or NABBA only. So, Joe had this reputation. Mind you, the Joe I know was a lot older than the Joe in those days, but he never came across as a dictator to me. Or, you know, he would listen to you, and he would change his mind. He was never stuck in the middle of anywhere.
That's a good point. In the Paris contest, I had the feeling that Ben was the one that was making the rules, and he was the one that had to say whether Sergio would be allowed to guest pose, because Serge Nubre pleaded with him to let Sergio appear and Franco, and the word was that Ben relented and said they could. So I think he was calling the shots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Arnold would have beat him also. I mean, but, and then I heard a lot of things like people would say, well, Bill Pearl is favored by the NABBA organization and by the NABBA judges because he was going, I think, for his fourth win. But I would think Arnold was also favored by the NABBA judges because Arnold had won four Mr. Universes in a row, right? He won 67 as an amateur and then 68, 69, and 70. So, I mean, it's, I think that they were both favored by the NABBA judges.
They would have been on equal standing, I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as far as Bill Pearl's concerned, you've got to take into effect... In those days, you know, Arnold came across as arrogant at times. Bill Pearl to this day is seen as the perfect gentleman.
Yeah,
and he was.
And it wasn't an act. You know, that was him all the way. So I could see somebody in NABBA thinking, we'd like a real gentleman to be doing this.
Right.
And Bill fitted it. There's a story you told about him picking the kid up. You know, there's legions. You know, Bill Pearl is you know, one thing that got to me is, I remember when Arnold told me he wanted to beat Bill Pearl, and he said it in such an aggressive manner, and this is like, what, 30 years after the event, which surprised me.
Yeah.
But I do remember when Bill Pearl got the Lifetime Achievement Award given by Arnold. I can't remember what year it was, but Arnold played it.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, and Arnold played a very cruel trick on him. He had him up there, and he said, as part of this prize, we're going to send you to the White House. You're going to spend a day with Mr. and Mrs. Bush. You're going to have dinner with them, spend the evening in their guests, whatever it is. And Bill's like, and then he says, and it's Mr. and Mrs. Bush at the Something Inn in Sacramento, at the White House Inn in Sacramento.
Yeah.
That was pretty cruel. I couldn't help but thinking, you know, this comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. 30 years later, and they still haven't forgotten about it. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about Wayne 72, because you mentioned Sergio posing, and this was right after the 72 universe in Essen, Germany, which is infamous because a lot of people thought, the Olympia, I'm sorry. And Arnold beat Sergio there, and you had a chance to photograph and videotape Sergio right after that.
Yes, that was in London. Sergio came over to London the next day, and it was probably the day after that that I worked with Sergio, thanks to Wag Bennett, who set it all up for me, because Sergio was staying with Wag. And I'll never forget the shock when Sergio walked through the door, and he completely filled the doorway with the width and this massive size, this tight T-shirt, and this tiny little waist. It was the most amazing shock that I ever got when I saw a bodybuilder up close, and I've never forgotten that. He was absolutely awesome, and then we went out and did our work at Wanstead Heath, and we did photos and video, and it was a moment I'll never forget.
Yeah, those who have never seen Sergio in person, it's hard to describe, you know. And it's a different world today because, you know, they have the synthol now and guys are shooting up their biceps and it's all artificial muscle in a way. But Sergio was all real muscle, and it was just an amazing sight to see because there was nobody that big back then with a waist like that. It was just, he was like a superhero. You never saw anything like it. Right. So what other NABBA Universe shows did you guys see then? Peter, you said you really stopped seeing them right around that time, right, in 71?
72 was the last one I went to because, you know, I went in another direction in training.
Yeah.
So, but I was aware of who was coming through. I was still following it, you know. But by that time, if we go to the mid-70s, that's when the pendulum started to swing to the Mr. Olympia being the premier contest and not NABBA, because the Olympia established in 65, NABBA was still the top contest, I would say, 71, 70, and then it started to change.
Yeah.
A lot of it was to do with Arnold's charisma in a way, that's where he was going, but also that regulation that came in, you can do one or the other, but you can't do both.
Yeah.
And if you want to get in the weeder magazines and publicity, all the rest of it, you know, you had to go in that direction.
So in a way, by weeder saying, you can only choose one or the other, and if you don't do, if you do a NABBA show, you're going to be banned from the IFBB. That, in a way, that sort of made the IFBB stronger eventually, right?
Yeah, they couldn't have done that in 68. It wouldn't have worked. They had to wait till they got to a position of power.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm that was part of the syndrome, you know, that Joe had the best magazine in the world. He was upgrading it. Mm-hmm. You know, guys didn't get much money or any money in those days. So a lot of it was like getting the magazines, you know, and they had shorter careers. I mean, we mentioned Jim Hazelot before. What would he have been if he hadn't retired at 27 or whatever it was? I mean, there was the guy that could have maybe pushed Arnold two or 3 years.
But it didn't happen. It was a pity. I always regret that I missed seeing Jim Hazelot by 1 year because he was there in London in 69, but he didn't come over in 1970, so I missed him. But, John, you've met him and talked to him, and he's still in good shape today.
Yeah, but he's still in great shape. I think he's 76 now, and he still works out in his garage, you know, 3 days a week. You know, he's on schedule, so, yeah, he's. It's sort of weird, though, because I've talked to so many bodybuilders like Chris Dickerson, Boyer Coe, and they all said this guy could have went all the way. He had it all. You know, he had the good looks. He had the wide shoulders. He looked like Steve Reeves, you know, bigger Steve Reeves. He had the legs. And he just chose to work at his job for the phone company, I think, or the electric company out in Tampa. And he's still there. He's still married to the same woman. And, you know, he just chose a quieter life, and he didn't pursue that. But you always think what could have been, you know. So let's talk a little bit about the magazines, Peter. We're just looking at some of your old pumping press here. And, you know, Flex Magazine just announced that they're going to stop publication. You were the head of that magazine for a long time. And one thing I noticed looking at your pumping press was the amount of material, the amount of words. And you were just saying, we just had a conversation before, and you were saying, you know, when the 91 Olympia came out, you had that magazine, you had pumping press ready the next week for a report on the 91 Olympia, and you said you wrote like 30,000 words, which is amazing, because you wrote all the material in that magazine, and I never realized pumping press had so much material. So I remember growing up, you know, reading the magazines in the late 70s, and I loved reading the magazines. They only came out once a month, and you'd read them, and you'd reread them, and reread them, and that's how, you know, I got to know these guys. You got to know their personalities. You got to know their background. I remember I sort of learned a lot of geography, because if some guy said he was born in a city in Maryland, I remembered that city from reading the magazines, you know. So we got so much information, and now, like you said, it's all different. The magazines are all dying. Dave Palumbo and John Romano just did a show on RX Muscle, and they were talking about how things are changing now with the media. The magazines are dead. And it really is a shame, isn't it? Because we don't get all that information. We don't get a good sense of the contest anymore. All we're getting is snippets. We're getting the information. And I noticed, like, with the Olympia or the Arnold now, even though it's covered in the internet, you know, and they might even have a live broadcast, the next day it's like it's over. It's done. And back then, when we used to read about it, it would last for months. We would talk about it for all year, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said earlier on, you know, I didn't know Arnold was entering the 1980 Mr. Olympia until I saw the magazine, which was 2 months after the event. And I always go back to when Big Ramy came into the 2013 New York Pro, he was an instant star. Globally, everybody saw him. Mm-hmm. By Wednesday, it was dead news. In the old days, nobody would have even seen him until a few weeks later.
Right.
And then the commotion would have started. Yeah. And I always looked up, it's a bit like modern television to me. I felt because we were all waiting for the magazines at the same time, we had a communal experience.
Yeah.
We all had the same experience. We're reading this. This is the story of the 1994 Olympia. Whereas now you've got one story over here, a bit over there, a bit over. So you got the whole package, and now you don't get that. But it's not. I mean, it's very, very sad that print's gone the way it is. But it's not just bodybuilding. I mean, even the New York Times saying in a few years it's done. And the other side of it is we're now dealing with an upcoming generation of teenagers and 20-somethings who have got used to the internet. That's where they go for their information. They don't buy magazines. The attention span is shorter because they've got they're doing all this business on the text and the all the abbreviations are getting on my nerves now. You know,
emojis.
It's like in 20 years' time, people are going to walk in and instead of saying you're all right, they're like, and he's going to go, LOL. You know, so everything's. I'm looking sometimes on the TV. You know, when they started saying President of the United States, POTUS, I was thinking, oops, who's POTUS? Anyway, I'm digressing, but yeah, it's a culture shift as well, and you know, I do hope people aren't rejoicing in the recession with magazines going on, because it, you know, they were a golden era, and if you lived through it, it was a great time, and we learnt a lot, you know, and it's. You know, it's a shame it's going that way, but for God's sake, let's revere it and look back on it with some fondness.
Yeah.
Just as an example, I bumped into a fan at the Arnold the other week, and he had with him a magazine, Peak Magazine, with my report on the 1971 Olympia in Paris, 71 Olympia.
You wrote the report.
I wrote the report, and I had written chapter and a verse, like you did, Peter, about what went on. I talked about the amateur contest, which was the Mr. Universe, which Albert Beckles won. And I talked about this unknown bodybuilder who was put up on the stage in the Mr. Olympia, and all this sort of information. And this guy was so happy to have a copy, and he wanted me to see the magazine and do a photograph of me holding the magazine with this report of mine, which I'd forgotten about, which brings me to the point, in-depth journalism about the contest no longer takes place.
Right.
No. It's not looked for anymore either.
Right.
No. Yeah. I remember reading articles, like one I remember right now is Ed Corney. They did an interview with him, I think it was in 1976, Muscle Builder, and he talked about training with Arnold for the 1975 Olympia, because he was his training partner, and he talked about that experience. And he also talked about how when he started bodybuilding, he was entering these smaller contests, and then he won, I think it was the Universe, the one that was covered in the book Pumping Iron, when he won the 1972 Mr. Universe in Baghdad. And he said that was the seminal point in his career. Like, that changed his career, because he became a winner and he knew he could do good things or great things. He could be a great champion with that one win. But he said every bodybuilder goes through that journey, and they always have that one contest where they train like their life depends on it. And then once they win that one contest, it proves to them that they're champions. That was a great insight into the mind of a bodybuilder, into the mind of a champion, and what it takes to win a contest. And you would never get that today on the internet, because nobody's going to interview him. They're just going to say, oh, he won the contest, and that's it. And you might get a little backstage interview on video for a minute or two, but that's it. You're not going to get anything in-depth. And that's what I really miss. And me and Wayne were talking in the car over here when we were driving over here about how you look at old movies like All the President's Men, where they had to research all this stuff and they had to find out all this information. And there's all these, and newspapers used to have researched articles, you know, with all the information. And now if you go to get a news story, it's on the internet and you're only going to get a paragraph and you're just going to get the highlights, you know?
Yeah. And because that's the standard, allied to the fact that, you know, people are used now to reading shorter stuff. That's all they want to do. They,
yeah.
If you said, oh, there's a 5,000-word article here about, oh, I'm never get through that.
Right.
You know, it's. I used to like to do the pro. I used like new guy called. I want to find out what makes this guy tick. Not as I don't care what he does for his biceps. I want to, you know, like somebody like Kevin Leverone, who's an interesting character.
Yeah, yeah.
Flex Wheeler, they were all interesting characters.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there aren't interesting characters today. I mean,
well, we never know about it.
Yeah,
about
we've never done the, you know, the in-depth thing. But you know, when you do the interviews backstage with somebody afterwards, yes, the winner, the winner's head somewhere else. He's thinking this. He's thinking that. He's, I want to eat. Let's get it done. Off he goes. You know, I often feel. I remember. Rick Wayne told me, I'm name dropping now, Rick Wayne, when he came back to Weider a few times, as you know, Wayne, but he went back in 75, or no, it must have been before that, maybe, because Joe was in New York, based in New York, New Jersey, and Joe said, okay, go down Mid-City Gym, come back with a story. So Rick goes down there, comes back. He interviewed all the guys in the... Joe says, no. I don't want to know what they think. I want to know what you think about what was going on.
Mm.
Yeah. Because a journalist is going to give you the goods.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It's a story that reminds me of...
Okay.
Unexpected. Sean Perry.
Oh, yeah.
Greg Merritt told me that this guy's got a website and he can write. I got in touch with Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Short story is, I gave him his first assignment was in New York to go to the 25th celebration of Pumping Iron.
In New York.
Yeah. And he came back. And he said, Gunter was there, Ronnie. He couldn't get to speak to Arnold. I said, Sean, I don't want to know what they think. I want to know what you think. I want to know, because this is what I knew. You were 13 years old when you saw Pumping Iron for the first time.
Yeah.
And you, on PBS, you audio taped it. And you would listen to the audio tape at night.
Wow.
I want to hear about that 13-year-old kid going from that. To mix, that's the story I want.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you don't get that story by always interviewing the victor. You need to go to the periphery and do some investigation, observation, and come up with the goods.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sean, he's gone to it.
Yeah.
Wayne, what do you think about the in-depth reporting? And
I just regret that it's gone, because when I used to be buying the magazines, and I used to read Peter's articles first because I liked the edge that he had in them. He would always have something a little bit controversial. He would say what he thought, and there was no other writer that was quite like that. And then on stage today, there's no real characters anymore, somebody that's a bit different, perhaps somebody that bends the rules a little bit. Everybody's pretty mundane now and very much the same. And I miss the unique characters that you used to find in the sport a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the reason for that. Maybe, you know, they'll come in a few years, there'll be a new batch come in of guys who have got this. But I don't know. Those guys we've mentioned before in the 90s came together at one time and they were all interesting. It'll happen again, but maybe it's because you might think, say, bodybuilder A, we think, well, he's pretty boring, really. He's got not much. But if you dig, you'll get a story.
Yeah, and you have to dig.
Yeah, you can't spend 5 minutes on it.
Sure, they all got stories, right?
Yeah,
they all
got
personalities.
Chris Lund used to say to me, I know your type. I've seen you interview people. You'll sit across the table from them, you're looking at them, and they'll tell you something sensational, and you'll say, hmm. And what they're thinking, oh, that's not sensational, I better come up with something else, you know.
Yeah.
But part of that was, if I interview somebody for an hour, play the tape back, it'll probably be 55 minutes of them, because that's what it's all about. I've seen... And I'm going off to. I've seen interviewers do things where a guy, oh, well, I don't agree with that. It doesn't matter what you agree with. He's the subject. You're wasting time now. That's not, you know, I've had a bodybuilder tell me he admired Adolf Hitler. I wasn't going to argue with him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's his opinion.
Give me more. Yeah, so those in-depth things just didn't happen by chance. I did a thing with Mike Mensa once where I probably had 6 sessions of 2 hours to get his story, because I wanted to get his story.
Yeah.
If you did it today, I don't know whether you'd find a home for the story.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it, too, is just the way things have changed, because like you were saying, Peter, you know, when you saw these guys in person, it was the first time we ever saw them. Now you see it on YouTube every day. You know, you can see these guys every day. So the magic is kind of gone. I remember, like, the first time I went to the Mr. Olympia, it was like seeing movie stars in person, you know. Because you're reading the magazines. You never saw them. You never even heard them speak. And then you see him in person, it's like, wow, it was just amazing. So I think a lot of it is just the culture has changed, you know. Yeah. The immediacy is, you know, we see these guys all the time now. So before we had to wait, we even had to wait for the results in the magazines, you know.
There was one guy, though, who broke the mold a little bit in the Olympia competitors, and that was Lee Priest, because he used to be, he wasn't a conformist, he was a non-conformist, but there aren't people around like him anymore, and Lee's, of course, retired. But I was trying to think of any real characters in the sport, and at the moment, everybody's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Lee Priest always speaks his mind. I remember when we were at WIDA, he was signed a couple of times, then not re-signed, and then one time we were re-signing him, and he'd come out with something controversial in Muscle Mag or something, and nobody in the building wanted to sign him. And I said, "Well," I said, "but that's why we want to. He's the bad boy of bodybuilding. That's who he is. He sells magazines. Yeah. And have you seen his fucking physique?
Right.
You know, he's, you know, if you look at." A big percentage of readers are short. He's the hero. He's the poster boy for that. And we had some great laughs in that. I remember one time at the Arnold, he wasn't competing. So he's talking to me. He's got a suit on. I've got a suit on. And this guy comes up and says, "Oh, is this your father?" Because we got the similar home.
Yeah.
So I started talking in Australian accent, you see, being so proud of my boy, you know.
Good.
And we played it on for this guy for about 10 minutes. Yeah. Another time we're standing at the Iron Man, and people were coming through the door. Who will give a ticket? Well, give it to us. And we were taking tickets because there was no security on it, you know. So I always enjoyed his you know, and I, like I say, it's this straitjacket effect, you know. It's almost like give Lee his head, you know. Don't take it personally, you know. You know, on the judging side, it's like, well, umpires, referees, the universally, that's part of the territory, just accept it.
Yeah.
Don't get uptight about it. And like I say, I was all for signing him, but, you know, the powers that be, not Joe particularly, said, "No, we don't want any part of this guy." But you're right, he was a character. Yeah.
A character.
Yeah. And he looked on stage, it was like, well, he's in shape. I mean, those arms are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he beat Ronnie Coleman once or twice.
Yeah.
He tells you about that too.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me for this great discussion. It's great to sit down with my two old friends, Wayne and Peter. Wayne, it's been great to see you. You're back from Australia. You're visiting America.
So, I came for the Arnold 30th anniversary in particular.
Yeah.
And the 30th Arnold was well worth coming for because I had the best time ever. And it was good to see all the past winners there, apart from Nasser, who's passed away, and for them all to line up together with Arnold for a group photograph on the Sunday morning for the seminar. That was something really special. And then the seminar with all the past winners talking to Arnold, or talking to Bob Ciccariello. And then Franco joined in, and he and Arnold told stories about their first years in USA. It was just a magic experience.
And you got a chance to talk to Arnold, right?
Yeah, I chatted with Arnold twice, and we talked about 1970 and 1971 in particular. And Arnold said, "I'd like to sit down with you one day and have a long conversation." So I hope that happens.
Yeah.
Now, Arnold is a great believer in history. I mean, my history with him is a bit checkered. I wrote a story in Health and Strength for Alex. Oh. Arnold expose, you know. The cracks are showing. The banned book, Wild Nights at Stallone's.
Yeah.
And
is that when the Wendy Lee's book came
out? Yeah, Wendy Lee's book. Yeah.
Yeah.
What it was, I lived in Red Hill. The suburb next to us was Arnold. They had a nightclub called Stallone's. So that was the night, Wild Nights at Stallone's. The cracks are showing, with the cracks at the top of Coppice Road. Somebody needs to do something about the banned book. Enid Blyton's books are banned from whatever. Anyway, we put this out, expose coming next month. No, it wasn't for Alex, was it? It was Muscle Mag, Dave McInerney. Before the next issue came out, Arnold's people came on. it was about the Wendy Lee book. They thought I'd got a copy. I didn't know anything about the Wendy Lee book. But I played it on to the point that we were trying to get an interview with Arnold in Germany or somewhere. I played it on for another month. And then the publisher gave the game away, said it was a spoof, you know, and I left then. That was enough for me. Anyway, fast forward a few years, working for Weider, just a writer. 95 Olympia preview. My assignment was to talk to all the previous Mr. Olympias, get their golden moment. Right. You know. Arnold was the last one I got hold of because he was travelling, and I thought, will he remember the name Peter McGough? Because all sorts of threats were being given here. We'll ruin your career, not from him, but from his publicist. Yeah. And they said, oh, you got 5 minutes with him. So this was like 6 o'clock on a midday thing, and it was on the phone, and 5 minutes went by, 10 minutes. I got him talking about all sorts of things. Because I've always had this thing. If you're interviewing somebody for the first time, especially when I was coming through and nobody knew who the hell I was, I'd tell them something about themselves very early on that they think, oh, how did he know that? Rich Gaspari, he wasn't going to do an interview with me. He was in England guest touring. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with this photographer talking, and he was talking to the photographer. He says, yeah, I really was inspired by this guy who went into the universe. He's £400, and he came in, I can't remember, Bruce Randall. And he looked at me like, oh, he knows something. And then he did the interview. Yeah. So with Arnold, we talked for about 45 minutes and I got a full-blown feature out of it.
Well, you were lucky.
You know, not just the thing, because early on he was talking about, and then that other guy that was, I says, Reg Lewis, and again, it was like, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. Yeah. And then I did a profile for him for his 50th birthday, Muscle and Fitness. Joe wanted me to write it. I didn't work for Muscle and Fitness. I wrote it. And then after that, every time, this is very big-headed, I'm sorry about it. After that, the next time they wanted a major feature on Arnold from Muscle, they rang him and said, he says, send the English guy.
Yeah.
And that was
nice.
That was how we always, and we built up a, went to his office, spent a day in Sacramento with him, all sorts.
You were very fortunate.
Yeah. So that's my own story.
Peter, tell us how you're doing, too, because I know you don't mind talking about this if you were asked. How you feeling lately? I know you have a lot of fans out there and a lot of people, which I think is great that a lot of people still care about you and they're thinking about you.
Yeah, I mean, to all the fans out there, to both of you. I'm doing okay at the moment. I had a bit rough last year, but I just want to say that I could never have got through this without my wife Anne and other people, but it's not about me. I mean, I've been going through this for 5 years now, and I never thought I would go through this. All I can tell you is that when you're told you've got cancer, you know, your head goes haywire. You don't know what to think. How can you fight this? I settled down and said, okay, I'm not going to look back what caused it. I'm not going to look too far forward. I'm not going to Google my diagnosis because that'll send you crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it an appointment, a procedure, a month at a time. A bit like bodybuilding. Short-term goals, long-term ones. And I know people say it really counts to be positive, but it really does. As long as you're not conning yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can honestly say that in 5 years, I've never had a moment of depression.
Wow.
Or woe me. I tend to look at it another way, like, well, I am 68. I've had a crack at life. I see a lot of people in the clinic I go to, a lot younger than me, who aren't going to make it. Yeah. And I'm thinking they haven't had a proper shot. You know, at least I got to where I wanted to get to. So I don't feel sorry for myself. And I want people out there to know that it's hard for the guy who's got cancer. It's hard for the family. It's hard for the friends. But just stay in there. Stay positive. Keep going. Because there's always new things coming up, new procedures. It's your job to keep alive for the next year till the next procedure comes up. And that's the way I go. And it's like, I always think of a saying by Winston Churchill, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah.
You have no choice.
Get through it.
Yeah. You have to get through it. So I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. I just want people to know it's not a death sentence particularly.
Yeah.
That you can get through it, and there's new advances coming through all the time. And with me, I had to figure out, I obviously want to live. Why do I want to live? Certain reasons. Remember, what's the most important? Fix, you're making bodybuilding, you've got this one long-term goal, not seven, one long-term goal. What's your long-term goal? The sole thing that's going to keep you going. I will not leave my wife Anne on her own. I keep saying to her, I ain't going anywhere. I cannot bear the thought, not that I'm a great person, of her being on her own. So I'm not going to let it happen. Not for a while, anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And
that's what I say. Just keep going. Take it a week at a time. There are rough times. There's lots of pain. There's lots of, you know, not nice things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always tomorrow and next week. You'll get through it. You'll get through it. Just grit your teeth and get through it.
Great. Well, we're all praying for you, and we're all behind you, so... All right, Peter. Thank you, and thanks, Wayne. And it was a great opportunity to talk to both of you guys. You're both good friends of mine and great historians of the sport. So it was great to get to talk to you guys.
And thank you, John, for getting us together and having this chat. And it's a historic moment, and I've been so proud to be a part of it.
All right.
Absolutely. We'll do this again in Australia.
All right. That's a date.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And next week we will be joined by Wayne Galash again, because Wayne and I got a chance to sit down and go over some of the history of the NABBA universe that we didn't discuss on our first couple of interviews. So that's going to be really a fascinating interview. We'll talk about a lot of these champions that I'm sure many of you are familiar with. So thank you to Peter McGough for inviting us to his house and doing this interview. And thanks also to Wayne Galash. I want to thank our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine, Old School Labs, and Redcon One, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We'll see you next week. Take care.